I was trying to reach Plaza Italia, which is the square where everyone gathers. So I was trying to reach there, and it was impossible. There was just so many people. Everyone was with pots and pans and making noise. And there were children dancing with their parents. There were people jumping on the like bus stops with very creative and witty signs, like making fun of the political class. And it was just impossible to reach the main square. People were just occupying the whole avenue next to the Mapocho River. The park, they were climbing trees. They were standing in the windows of the houses around Plaza Italia. They were on top of the statues. People were commenting on the streets. It took us so long to come together again after the dictatorship. And now we are all here and we want the same thing. We want a better life quality for everyone.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, how inequality in Chile sparked massive protests. It all started with something that might seem small. In early October, the Chilean government raised the price of the metro. About a week later, high school students decided to protest the hike. They started jumping turnstiles. They went on social media using the hashtag Evasión Masiva, or mass evasion, which is basically saying, don't pay the fare.
The government blamed the fare rise on rising oil prices and a weaker peso. Protesters don't buy that.
The protests grew and some turned violent. Then on October 18th, fires broke out at metro stations across Santiago. The next day, President Sebastián Piñera announced a state of emergency and he deployed the military.
For five nights, Santiago's been under curfew, enforced by military patrols. Godoy says she never thought she'd see that again. She's horrified.
It was the first time the military had patrolled the streets of Chile since the dictatorship of General Augusto Pinochet, which ended in 1990. The move reminded many Chileans of that dark period when protesting could be deadly and hundreds of citizens were murdered and disappeared by the regime. The protests kept on growing, and they became about much more than the price of the metro. One Friday afternoon in late October, more than a million people crowded into Plaza Italia in downtown Santiago, the largest ever protest in the history of Chile. They were calling for broad structural changes to Chile's economic system. Paulette Desormeaux was at that protest. She was the person describing the crowd at the beginning of our episode. Paulette is a Chilean investigative journalist and a professor at the Pontificia Universidad Católica de Chile. She's been reporting from the protests almost every day. We spoke with her from Santiago about the people she's been talking to and what they want to see change in Chile. Paulette, thank you for all of your reporting.
Hi, Maria.
So at one of the protests, you spoke to someone by the name of Constanza Villanueva. She's 23 years old. She's studying social work, and this is what she had to say. She said, obviously, we get tired of injustice, not only for us young people, but also for older adults, for kids. We want a different kind of Chile. We're tired of getting something in our eye.
It is kind of obscene, that expression.
Really?
So it's like that they put their penis in our eye. It's like when you're really angry, when you feel you've been abused, you use that expression.
Whoa. Wow. I'm fascinated by the fact that here she is, 23 years old, and she's saying, it's not just about me. I'm fighting for the older generation. And as somebody who's over 50, I'm like, oh my God, I love the fact that this feels like a very intergenerational movement, frankly.
Yes. It all started here with the increase in the fare of the metro ticket. Secondary students, through social networks, organized each other for people to jump over the turnstiles and not pay the ticket fare. And many politicians criticized this, not only because they thought it was like a criminal action to not pay for the ticket, but also because the increase in the fare of the price did not affect the students. It was for the price for adults. And when talking to the students, they all said, well, maybe we don't pay for it, but our families do, our neighbors do. So we don't just want a better society for ourselves. We need to build a better society for everyone.
So something happened during these protests, which is that they became not only violent themselves, but that the response from the government, I mean, the government sent out soldiers, they had water cannons put on people, they declared a curfew. So what happened here? Why was the response of the government so militaristic?
The day that the protests emerged, there were subway stations that were burned out. I was at one of them, and it looked as if it would have been bombed. People were trying to help cleaning there. There were families just picking the ashes. But no one expected this like anger to come out in this way. We had never seen metro stations turn to ashes. The city in Santiago got totally paralyzed because the 136 metro stations were closed. They were shut off exactly at the time where people were leaving work. The metro takes 2.6 million people daily. And it's like, well, those 2.6 million people were on the streets, on the sidewalks. And there was this chaos. And in the middle of that chaos, these spontaneous acts of anger against the system started appearing in different parts of the country. And as days followed, the police became more and more repressive. I was reporting on the streets, and we were supposed to go to La Moneda, the governmental palace. We couldn't reach there because of the water cannons and tear gas bombs. So I was listening to some Mapuche people and Rapa Nui people play music. There were families there. We were just playing music, really. And then the water cannon came and the police started throwing tear gas bombs to our feet and to our faces. And that was absolutely unnecessary. We were not doing anything.
So you actually went to one of these metro stations, the Estación de Metro de San Pablo. This is the one that was burned down, right? And it's there that you speak to a woman named Gladys Zúñiga. She's 53 years old. She was there helping to clean up the rubble. And this is what she said to you. So she's basically very upset here. She says healthcare is, and then she uses a swear word. She says they're stealing from the professors. And then she uses another swear word. What's she talking about here?
Gladys is really angry for the same reason that most people are angry, which is that there is a really big difference in Chile if you have money and if you don't. Gladys is a woman that works at a free market. She bakes and sells empanadas and corn cakes every day. In a good day, she will sell 30 empanadas, and with that she's happy. And she is 53 years old. She's worried about what will happen when she cannot work anymore because she knows that she won't get any pension. And she wishes that one of her grandchildren could go to university. She dreams that hopefully one of them can be a doctor or an engineer. But she knows that if nothing changes now in Chile, that is just wishful thinking. It's not something that will be possible.
So there was a certain level of surprise that the protests were happening in Chile because, you know, in the United States, Chile is often seen as this economic success. The economy has grown. Really, poverty has decreased from 30% over the last couple of decades to less than 7%. So people would say, well, isn't that an economic success story? But it seems like people feel like they're being robbed, like something is being taken from them. What's that about?
Chile has been very successful in its economy, but the benefits of that growth is not distributed in society. So if you go to the public sector for like to get medical help, you might wait 460 days average to, for example, have a surgery when you break your hip. And if you go to the private clinic, you can get the best technology to repair your bones within a day. Like you do not need to queue. You do not need to go. Being in hospital, it's actually like being in a hotel. Regarding education, it is the same thing. Some of our schools are incredibly good, and students there later go study to the best universities of the world. And then in the public school system, teachers get paid extremely little, and there are no conditions in schools to actually properly teach. Many schools don't even have running water 24 hours a day. They have 45 children in one room with one professor who is completely overwhelmed. In the shanty towns, there is a lot of violence. Many kids are underfed. Their parents are in prison. And then you see all the rich people just having a life quality that people like Gladys could only dream of.
Let's talk for a moment about Chile's economic system that has created this inequality. And you trace it back to the Pinochet dictatorship, when the economy moved from a more kind of democratic socialist system to a very clear free market system. Is that something that people are talking about now?
Very much. Most people know that this system was implemented in the 80s and that it was created by a group of Chileans who went to study with Milton Friedman and came back saying we need a liberal market, free market policies. And people talk about this because they have the impression that although there was less growth before, there were certain services and things that were secure for people, like access to education and health, for example. So things changed under the dictatorship, and it was fierce. Even Milton Friedman said that a system like this would have never been able to be implemented in a democratic regime, because at the beginning, people suffered too much for the economy to adjust. There was a lot of poverty.
So the protests are continuing to go on, and people are talking about what's going to come next for Chile. So how has the government responded so far?
The government is saying, oh, no, we've heard you. The first measure was to cancel this increase in the metro fare, but that didn't make anyone happy because the protests are not about the metro. They're about the system. So then the government proposed to increase the pension of the poorest people, but this increase was about $27 a month. That obviously did not make people happy. Then the parliamentarians decided that it was okay to discuss to reduce the money they make, because they make 33 times the minimum wage. They're trying to save the system, adapting policies to what people are demanding. But these are not structural changes. So what I think will happen is that in a very organic way and in a very grassroots organization, like, we'll be able to build certain concrete demands for the government to implement. One of them is to modify the constitution. I think that is the most important thing that synthesizes everything that people want. People do not want to have a constitution that was written under the dictatorship of Pinochet. People want a new democratic constitution. And that's why they're gathering in the neighborhoods to discuss what this constitution should look like.
You know, one of the things that we've witnessed over this period of time is protest in Latin America. We've been seeing it in Puerto Rico, where people were dancing in the protests. In Chile, really, music has been central in terms of the protest. There's this one song from the 1980s. It's become a kind of anthem for the protests. It's called El Baile de los que Sobran, which means the dance of the people left over. Mis amigos se quedaron, igual que tú. It's by the rock band Los Prisioneros, one of my favorites back in the 80s. What's the significance of this song now? And why is this song that I was listening to in the 1980s, why is it making such a comeback now?
This song represents, I think, the same feeling that people had back then in the 80s. It is a good song. It is not victimizing those who are leftovers. They are dancing and they're telling everyone, come join us. So there is empowerment in this song and at the same time, a very clear criticism to a system that makes you be leftover. Many of the students that are now protesting heard these songs at home. With their grandparents, they played it in their cassettes and records. And it's a popular anthem here that shows that emotion of we are many, we haven't been benefited, and we are strong, and we want change, and we are empowered, and we are dancing, and we do this with joy.
Paulette, thank you so much for all of your hard work. Stay safe.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be keeping an eye on Chile and the rest of Latin America as this story progresses. But coming up on Latino USA, we're going to bring you the story behind the anthem of Chile's protesters. Stay with us, no te vayas.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
Support also comes from HBO's latest series, His Dark Materials, based on author Philip Pullman's beloved trilogy. Follow Lyra's quest to find her kidnapped friend, an adventure that leads her to uncover a sinister plot of a secret organization, encounter extraordinary beings, and protect dangerous secrets. Starring Daphne Keene, Ruth Wilson, and Lin-Manuel Miranda. Don't miss His Dark Materials, Mondays at 9 p.m., only on HBO.
After the recent mass shooting in El Paso, Texas, some 40 people around the country were arrested for planning violence. On the next Embedded, we'll look at one arrest.
He sat next to me at lunch. So, like, I don't know if some of this stuff got posted while he was sitting next to me or, like, in my house and stuff, you know?
What it tells us about extremism in schools. That story on Embedded from NPR.
We're back. And before the break, we heard about how the 80s rock song, El Baile de los que Sobran, has become an anthem for protesters in Chile. The song was written during the years of the Pinochet dictatorship, when performing protest music could be dangerous. Take, for example, the story of Chilean folk singer Víctor Jara. In the 1960s and 70s, Víctor Jara used his platform to speak out against violence and to sing about peace and social justice. Later, because of his music, he was tortured and killed during the coup that placed Pinochet in power. Víctor Jara's execution in 1973 sent a chilling message to others who opposed the dictatorship, but it didn't completely silence them. A group of rebel teenagers took that horrific moment and they used it to fuel their fight against the oppressive regime. They became Los Prisioneros. From Santiago, Chile, reporter Elizabeth Troval brings us the story of how a rock band that was born out of combating a dictatorship lived to tell the tale.
Los Prisioneros began playing together in high school in the early 80s. Augusto Pinochet had been in power for nearly a decade by then. Over the years, thousands of Chileans had disappeared and been executed. Many fled the country.
Pinochet era una presencia constante en ese tiempo.
That's Los Prisioneros guitarist Claudio Narea. He says Pinochet was a constant presence back then, and for a while, people couldn't really protest. In some ways, he says, his band began playing around the time when more protests started to happen. These protests would get pretty rough, deadly even. Ironically, when the band first got together, they were not as politically aware as you'd think. They were just music nerds. While their classmates were drinking, smoking, and listening to disco, Claudio, Jorge Gonzalez, and Miguel Tapia did the opposite. They were teetotaling rebels, obsessed with punk.
Principalmente The Clash nos influyó mucho. Canciones con contenido social.
We were very influenced by The Clash and their social commentary. We realized that their songs were about the problems in England, and we saw that Chile was much worse. So that motivated us to write songs about what was happening here. The band started writing songs that critiqued the status quo. When people told them that their name, The Prisoners, was too provocative, they didn't really care. They were too naive to be scared.
Confiado en el sentido que pensamos que a nosotros no nos iba a pasar nada.
At the time, we didn't think anything would happen to us, even though it definitely could have, Claudia says. Like with Víctor Jara. Jara was a famous Chilean folk singer killed at the start of Pinochet's regime. In 1984, the boys came out with their first album, The Voice of the 80s. Most radio stations wouldn't give them airtime, so fans would share the songs through cassette tapes, which were easy to copy and give to friends. Then the band received a game-changing invitation.
Aprovechamos de recibir al grupo Los Prisioneros.
To play at the annual telethon on national television. All of Chile would be watching. And they start singing. Something big is on the horizon, you can feel it. The punks are shaking things up. And then suddenly, the music stops. The TV screen goes green. A commercial pops up.
Ahí en otro momento nos empezamos a dar cuenta de que parecía que a alguien le preocupaba el éxito de los prisioneros.
In that moment, we knew that someone was worried about our success, Claudio says. And Pinochet had a reason to be worried.
Creo que la censura finalmente le da valor al mensaje de ellos. El mismo hecho que hayan...
That's Chilean director Jordi Box. He says the censorship actually gave the band's message more power.
Que este grupo, con sus canciones, iba a hacerle perder el miedo a la población.
Jordi says Los Prisioneros helped people stop being so afraid. The band pushed the limits. Chileans loved their anti-establishment lyrics and sang along. Meanwhile, the dictatorship faced growing opposition. Then, in 1988, it all came down to a vote. Chileans would decide whether or not to keep Pinochet in power.
Porque sin la dictadura, la alegría va a llegar. Porque pienso en el futuro, voy a decir que no.
Huge media campaigns promoting both sides swept the nation. And then, at a press conference right before their big tour, the band's lead singer Jorge González says he'll vote no to Pinochet.
Era una gira de 40 ciudades, hicimos 7. Y después el resto, no hay permiso, y se acabó.
Claudio says they had planned to tour 40 cities, but ended up only playing 7. The government didn't let them play anywhere else. The band was broke. They couldn't promote their album, and they didn't want corporate sponsorship. But they kept playing anyway. Los Prisioneros became a voice of the No movement. In October 1988, the No campaign won, meaning there would be no more dictatorship. Pinochet said he would respect the results of the vote and step down. And he did, in 1990, when free elections brought a new president to power.
Reconozco y acepto el veredicto mayoritario expresado en el día de ayer por la ciudadanía.
No digo que gracias a la banda exclusivamente.
Yordi, the Chilean director, says Los Prisioneros can't take all the credit for Pinochet stepping down, but who knows what would have happened if they hadn't been around.
Pero quién sabe si quizá habría ganado el sí.
The members of Los Prisioneros have each gone their own direction, but their music keeps on bringing people together. They've even inspired a tribute band, Los Sudacas. Los Sudacas are playing at a free public concert in Santiago's Plaza de Armas Square. It's Friday after work, and Chileans of all ages gather around the stage. Roxana Atavales and her daughter Michelle Diaz are rocking out. Roxana was 8 years old when the dictatorship began. When she started to listen to Los Prisioneros in her early 20s, it helped her let go.
No, para mí se me abrió como un campo de alegría.
For me, it opened up a world of joy. Singing along, I felt free of everything that was happening, she says. At home, Roxana still has Prisionero's first tape a friend gave to her 20 years ago. She guards it with her life. Roxana's daughter Michelle says her mom taught her a lot about what happened during the dictatorship through the music. Michelle knows she's living in a different Chile, one where life isn't perfect, but it's a lot freer than it used to be when her mom was her age. They're both grateful to Los Prisioneros for helping make that happen.
Our thanks to Elizabeth Troval for that story, which originally aired in 2017. This episode was produced by Alisa Escarce and edited by Fernanda Camarena. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Palizacar, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, and Janice Yamoka, with help from Ginny Montalvo and Maya Cueva. Our engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our digital team includes Julio Ricardo Varela and Amanda Alcántara. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Fernanda Uriegas. Our interns are Adriana Tapia and Juan Diego Ramirez. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, I'll see you on all of our social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. The Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of a culture of health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Where is your mind, Sofia Palizacar? Where is your mind, Sofia Palizacar? Sofia Palizacar. Où est ton... Damn it. Cabeza. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, after Hurricane Maria, an eccentric community of cryptocurrency investors arrives in Puerto Rico with promises to change everything.
This is a decentralized movement. I'm not aware of anyone building any gated community. I think
it's happening
one.
Now!
But what do Puerto Ricans think about that? That's next time on Latino USA.